Back in the Young Jersey, drop it. Cenk and Anna still here. Kerry Harrison. Kerry and I used to work at Sirius Satellite Radio together back in the day. He's one of the co-founders of OutQ, and now he's a global correspondent for public radio. So, Kerry, great to have you back on the Young Turks.
And I have to say, I'm not sure how legal it is, but I drove here watching the Young Turks in my car on my phone.
Oh, wow.
I think that's good behavior, but that's just between us, just, you know, my habits.
You can listen to the Young Turks on your car as well. You can listen on Sirius, which we're back on, or obviously through a YouTube app or our website, TYTnetwork.com. All right, and by the way, there's a lot of people who missed the beginning of the show, and I know you guys were looking forward to it. We're gonna do other stories, including on the alt-right, but just for fun, one more time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Down goes Bannon! Down goes Bannon! Oh, I just thought, I just realized, down goes Bannon. That's what Scaramucci was saying he did.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, right?
Down goes Bannon on himself! Okay. Let me read a couple of quick tweets for you guys. About the Problem Solver Caucus, Stu says the problem is this caucus. The solution is Justice Democrats. Damn, I like it. JusticeDemocrats.com/win. Go help them win. I Am Sock says, where can I turn my Soros bucks into Bitcoin? That's funny. And Panda says, it's quite glorious how the purity test to be a member of the alt-right morphs every other day. So much mental gymnastics at play.
Yes.
Which leads us perfectly into the next story.
Yes. All right. Let's go to it. Genetic testing is something that a lot of people are trying out to figure out what their heritage is, to figure out whether or not they might have some genetic concerns to address. But there are members of white supremacist groups who are doing these genetic tests just to figure out how pure they are. Are they completely white or do they have something else mixed in? Well, these tests are awesome because more often than not, they'll find that some percentage of their genes indicate that they're actually maybe sub-Saharan African or from a different part of the world and not completely European white. So in a new study, sociologists Aaron Panofsky and Joan Donovan actually looked at years worth of posts by these white supremacists in regard to their genetic testing. And they wanted to see what the reaction would be from white supremacist groups. Would they just flat out reject these individuals now that they found out that they're not completely white? Well, what they found was that about 153 users shared the results of their genetic tests on one of these alt-right, or I should say white supremacist websites. And what they found was the following. Instead of rejecting members, let's go to graphic three. Instead of rejecting members who get contrary results, the conversations are overwhelmingly focused on helping the person to rethink the validity of the genetic test. And some of these critiques, while emerging from deep-seated racism, are close to scientists' own qualms about commercial genetic ancestry testing. So let me clarify that. Scientists are worried about the methodology. But when it comes to white supremacists, they question the methodology only because it gives them a result that they don't like.
Yeah, so we talked about this on the show yesterday. They're still working on perfecting these ancestry websites and the methodology that they use. And the more people that use it, the better they become because then they can track more parts of the world, etc. But those qualms with the exact certitude of these tests mm-hmm. is different from the white nationalist guys. Because to give you a sense of that, they'll do things like, well, all right, listen, it says you're partly Jew, but you should use the mirror test.
Oh my God.
This is a test, this is a thing that they do, okay? So what's the mirror test? I'd never heard of it, so I wanted to know. It sounds fun. It's not.
Let's go to graphic four.
Okay, graphic four, here we go. It says, if you see a Jew in the mirror looking back at you, that's a problem. If you don't, you're fine.
What?
So these are not people interested in science.
No, 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 there's more, there's more. I mean,
of course.
Remember that this is a group of people that usually buy into crazy conspiracy theories, right? So others try to discredit the genetic tests as a Jewish conspiracy.
Yeah, of course they are.
That
yeah.
is trying to confuse true white Americans about their ancestry. By the way, the 153 users who shared their genetic test results were writing on Stormfront. So that is the webpage that the sociologists monitored and got these reactions.
Stormfront is white nationalist, anti-Semitic,
yeah.
the whole spiel.
Well, imagine how threatening that is to your pedigree. It's like if you went and bought a collie and you think it's going to be a beautiful collie and you find out it's actually a reindeer chihuahua and an ocelopso. This is terrible and embarrassing. If you're a white nationalist, you have the pride. And then you, you know, spit in a cup or pee in a tin can or whatever you do, and they find out that you're all of the above.
Yeah.
That's kind of horrifying for you. Then you have to sell to your friends. Well, actually, you know, you should have me at the dinner table. I'm like just like you, and you're not. It kind of reminds me of the diminishing membership of the Catholic Church. It's starting to get small. So what do? You get a new pope. Instead of saying, well, you know, we hate this and we hate that, it's like we love everyone. Love is the name of the game. And so it kind of works that way now.
Yeah.
It's we have to include, because think of it, if one of them has these genetic anomalies mm-hmm. of 3 to 8%, they all probably do, because everybody did it with everybody's grandmother at one time.
Yeah, so that's a great point, because part of the reason that the religious folks let go of other taboos, like you're not supposed to get divorced, and that was a big deal back in the day. But then everybody got divorced, and they're like, oh, it's hard to hate everybody, so we have to pick a smaller group. And then they went with gays, and they're like, okay, let's hate them. And then they found out everybody has somebody gay in their family, and they're like, oh, we got to pick a new group, right? So now Stormfront is is where hate is centered. It's built on that. And so in this case, they're really in a conundrum. Because like, what if it's a newer member there and they test, like, now you know, I don't know if it's 8% or 14% sub-Saharan African, which by the way happened to one of their leaders, mm-hmm. This guy Craig Cobb, who had actually bothered to do an all-white enclave, or he was trying at least in North Dakota. He goes on a talk show and they do the test on him and he's 14% African. So and he's like, oh no. No, it can't be, right? Or they find out you're 8% Jewish or whatever. If you're a new member, they're like, no, get out of here. Oh, we don't want you around here.
I guess he could argue that he's actually South African. You know?
It is sub-Saharan.
Right. Yeah, right?
So yeah.
It's different.
Yes.
I'm Dutch.
But if they're older members, they're already part of the us. And so, you know, my sense of the conservative mind, now it's not fair to lump conservatives with these clear and avowed racist, but is that? But it's just a smaller subgroup of that. Is that their conception of us is different? Like for normal conservatives, a lot of them are great to their family, great to their community, great to their church. So it's not that they're bad guys. It's just they have a smaller version of us, right?
Right.
Whereas progressives have a much larger version of us: blacks, gays, Asians, Jews, everyone, right? And we want to expand the circle of liberty and freedom. And they have more, and so when the racists, they have a really small definition of us, so that if you're 8% Jew, they're like,
And we all know genetically what happens when you inbreed. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is actually the problem. If you want to have something so specific, and it's just you and your sister, you know, you're going to have like
some
three-headed genius coming out of that little equation. And that's kind of what we're dealing with here in many ways.
Yeah, you're going to
want.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to wind up with Joffrey.
Back to Game of Thrones.
And so just last point on that is that but if you're an older member, even if you're pretty heavily percentage Jew or black or whatever, they're like, but he's already part of us. So that's why they're kind of stuck here.
They're stuck.
And us is not that big anyway.
So not only are they stuck, they do play all sorts of mental gymnastics in order to accept that person or continue to accept that person into their group. So I'll give you an example. So others were told they could remain part of white nationalist groups in spite of what their ancestry revealed, as long as they didn't mate or only had children with certain ethnic groups. Others used these test results to put forth a twisted notion of diversity, one that allows them to say, no, we're really we're really diverse and we don't need non-white people to have a diverse society. So they're saying that they are just inherently diverse because they have some percentage of their background that isn't white.
Yeah, no, we're okay, we're diverse. That dude's 7% Jew and that one's 3% Arab. We're covered.
And have you noticed how progressives, we make love. These people mate. Like chimpanzees or you know, ocelots or three-toed lemurs. You know, it's really kind of like your iguana out there. Which I admire, by the way.
That's so funny. It didn't really like hit me until you put it that way. I never referred to sex as mating.
Yeah, because they're so obsessed with breeding.
Yes.
Right? Like to your point about dogs earlier, it's about keeping them purebred. And what a terrible way to live, by the way. Like, okay, I'm not going to choose based on the content of your character. I'm just going to choose based on whether you're in the right race or religion. And then in terms of finding my mate, who cares if we're compatible or we love each other? The question is an arbitrary one. Are you in the, do you have the right breeding? Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, we're likely wrong on, and we'll find out after the ancestry test.
Yeah.
And I think they care about all that stuff because there are, in fact, 11% three-toed lemurs.
Right?
All right.
Which can be proven out by their argument.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to women in the alt-right. Oftentimes when discussions are had about the so-called alt-right, it is usually in regard to pretty young white males. In fact, the hate rally that took place in Charlottesville, Virginia, displayed a pretty large number of young white males. However, The Atlantic asked the question of whether or not there are women who believe in that movement and who have participated in that movement. And sure enough, there is some percentage of women who are part of the alt-right. However, they aren't as vocal. So George Hawley, who is an author of Making Sense of the Alt-Right, estimates that around 20% of the alt-right supporters are women. Now, that's what he claims. I haven't seen any other research into that. But here's what The Atlantic found from talking to some of the women who identify as part of the alt-right. So there are a lot of white women who buy into this movement. They're just doing it in private. They're not vocal, but they are supporters of the men in their lives who are. So let's hear from Claudia Davenport, who is an alt-right activist. She says the following. As for female empowerment, there's nothing that has made me feel more empowered in my life than supporting and being supported by a strong man. I think that men and women are better off when we stop fighting nature and allow our distinct identities to shine through. Okay, I want to respond to that real quick before you guys do. I think it's awesome that you feel empowered by that. Like, you feel empowered by letting a strong man take charge, and you should do you, right? However, it is not my nature to sit back and have a man take care of me. That goes against my nature. So you don't get to dictate how I live my life. You don't get to dictate what my nature is or tell me what my nature is. You do you, I do me, okay?
Yeah, and so they claim that they want strong men. There are men here who are too strong. But a lot of these guys, you know, they're strong in a pack. And then as we saw in Charlottesville, you know, the minute that they have the roles reversed on them and they love to threaten violence, etc. And I don't think anyone should reverse roles on them. And I think violence is a terrible idea coming from any direction. But you saw the crying Nazi a couple of days ago on the show. Oh my
God. Strong men.
Yeah, I mean.
I got an arrest warrant and nothing I can do about it.
That's right. I mean, as Anna accurately called it, it was a cucktastrophe. And he started, it turns out I read today, as a men's rights guy. So these guys that they think are so strong, the minute there's any kind of what they perceive to be danger, they're all in a sense George Zimmerman's, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a tough guy, I work out. And that guy again, the crying Nazi, who kept talking about how he works out and he's ready, but then turned out it wasn't so ready. And so what do? The first thing they do is they reach for their gun because they're afraid. So those are the so-called strong men that you're supporting. But hey, look, it doesn't matter. If you like them, you like them. Have at it, Hoss. But as Anna said, you don't get to speak for all women.
You totally nailed it. So exactly to that thinking, these are guys who need a nest. Mm-hmm. You, Anna, are sitting in the nest like a hen, guarding his eggs, his precious eggs. And the fact is, he can't feed himself. He can't do his own laundry. He can barely think. He certainly can't go shopping. And without you, he's screwed. Seriously, he can't even think or talk. You put him on a camera, as he was, talking about having an arrest warrant, the guy melts down. Meanwhile, you're having children, raising them, cooking, cleaning, and God knows whatever else tasks he has in mind, so that he can live at least a upper lower class lifestyle.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is they do see men as the individuals who should be on the front lines protecting people and protecting the borders. Yeah. But they think of women as nurturers. Biologically, they are built to be nurturers and nothing more. And so it's always been super fascinating to me when women join groups like this, because in my view, they think less of you. So how can you agree with people who think less of you? But look, if there are women who are turned on by the notion of a man, you know, having that kind of power over her, again, do you. Like, I don't care. I have no interest in telling these women, like, no, you have to go out there and you have to be strong and you have to do this and you have to do that. No, I want you to live the life that you feel comfortable living. But at the same time, you also don't get to tell me what my nature is, right, okay? Right. My nature has never been to be submissive or to be quiet and to not share my point of view. My nature is to be strong. My nature is to voice my opinion. My nature is to go out there and work and be independent. So that's the part that really upsets me, I guess, because it's a group of people telling all women, this is the way things are supposed to be. This is what your biology
is. Yeah, because their ideology isn't freedom.
Right.
So you're free to do whatever you want. Their ideology is, no, we're going to dictate it. And so this is the proper role for men, and that's what they should do. And this is the proper role for women, and you should know that. And by the way, if you don't, they'll then intimidate you online. And if they get an opportunity, sometimes like in Charlottesville, in person. And even some of their, this is really funny. So they've got some alt-right women who are more prominent, they like them because they get to go, no, there's women on our side, there's women, there they are, right? But then, as this article explains, two of them, Lana Lochteff and Isla Stewart, went and did this, you know, online video, etc.
A podcast,
and they're like, see, we're normal, we have women. Okay, we're not betas, we have women, right? And guess what happened? Of course, misogyny rain down on them in the comment section.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that they're feminists in disguise. These women are the same old tainted, effed up, strong women.
Okay. Right, and they intentionally misspelled women with a Y. I don't.
They think that's like a slight to feminists. So for all that talk of like, no, we like women as long as they know their role. Not even then. Like the minute they see a strong woman, even if it's on their side, their manhood is so threatened by that they melt down like a snowflake.
Yeah, it's why you put burkas on women. You put them on, it's not because the women are out of control, it's because we men become turgid. We too mess. We lose our discipline. So we have to dress you up in a tarpaulin. And this way, we're safe and not threatened.
Yeah, and by the way, Muslim fundamentalists are the right wing of the Muslim world. So they are against freedom. They're against you getting to choose. They say men should dominate, just like these guys in their own context. They're the alt-right of the Muslim world. And that's why they're also scared of women, also need to cover them up, and have a very similar ideology. And also say you shouldn't get to choose what you do in your life, like like Anna wants to, I want to, etc. We get to dictate the rules.
Right, and that's the biggest problem. I want to leave with one final component to all of this, which I think is super relevant. So there are male members of the alt-right that think having women be part of their group is a positive thing, and it's because it can help them recruit individuals. And so they do have an easier time recruiting people because they oftentimes are younger, attractive. So let's go to graphic 14. So Kelly Baker, who's the author of this piece, says, when women do appear in alt-right journals or online discussions, it's as objects of attraction. They need to appear as victims or passive objects of male desire.
Also very similar to an ISIS strategy, where they recruit women and they promise them all sorts of things about strong and glorious and honorable men who are going to do the fighting. And then they'll use the women to try to lure in more fighters from Europe and other parts of the world.
But if they're no longer virgins, what role do they have? Isn't that kind of the plot of the play? 76 virgins?
Yeah, I think it's 72. And my favorite part of that story is that they might have misinterpreted the Quran, it might actually say not 72 virgin, but 72 dates. So basically, they're just getting raises.
But and Salman really Rushdie wants in his speech. To be fair.
They are delicious, yeah. but he's like, imagine the look on Mohammed Atta's face when he's like, raisins? And it's always the same story. Come here, come here. We got something great for you. And then what do they do? Whether they're alt-right Muslims or alt-right hateful white nationalists? Nah, just kidding. You have to live by my rules and not what you actually want.
Exactly.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We've got a lot more coming up for you guys, including Jeff Sessions' war on pot. Is he winning? And is he being honest? Now you know that's not true, but we'll show you his lies, and it's funny. We'll be right back. Back on the Young Turks, Paul Marzano and Peter Shin are the members of the day. TYTnetwork.com/join to support the show. Get the whole show commercial free anytime you want. Plus all the network shows. On Sunday we have What the Flick. We're going to go live and watch Game of Thrones with you guys when it starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. And then right afterwards we're going to take a quick break and do the Game of Thrones review live as well. At 10 o'clock Eastern, so don't miss that. That's right on youtube.com/TYT, the main channel. Quick tweets for you guys. Heiserberg says it's 72 virgins, 76 would be just ridiculous. Dances With says that's why marrying your brother or sister is handy, you know their pedigree. Wow. And Christy AMF says, I love the joyous energy Kerry Harrison is bringing to TYT tonight.
Oh, thank you.
All right, look at
listen.
That.
I was horripilating in anticipatory delight all week. Say that five times.
That was awesome.
I couldn't say it once. All right, you got breaking news.
Yes, breaking news. All right. Steve Bannon has spoken to the Weekly Standard and gave them a statement in regard to what the future of the Trump presidency is likely to be based on his perception. He is essentially declaring the impact of the Trump presidency over. He says the Trump presidency that we fought for and won is over. We still have a huge movement and we will make something out of this Trump presidency, but that presidency is over.
Okay, so this settles the question that was brought up earlier today when it was announced that Steve Bannon was gone. He pretended for about a second that he was going to be supportive of the Trump presidency either way. And he said, no, we're just going to fight the liberals and we're not going to attack Trump, even though his own guys at Breitbart were doing hashtag war. Mm-hmm. So now that lasted not even half a day. And a couple of hours later, he's like, I was just been kidding around. No, the Trump thing's over. We're done with it.
Now, wait a minute. If I'm hearing correctly, we can all just go home now.
Oh,
Trump's
great.
Finished. It's over.
Over.
Who are putting in his place? Can we redo the election? Can we go for Bernie Sanders?
Good. Okay. Done. We'll have a plebiscite tomorrow at 3 a.m.
So, I mean, just think about who Trump is as a person and what his likely response or reaction will be to that statement.
Yes.
It will not be a response where he wants to reconcile and make things better. He has a gigantic ego, and his ego will be bruised continuously by Bannon criticizing him.
No. When they attack, and Breitbart has now said we will attack by calling the Trump presidency over, Trump will counterattack, and this will be a wonderful vicious cycle where they'll continue to punch each other in the face. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Yeah.
And I hope we get to see Trump's thumbs with the bruises from tweeting. He's going to have like
with
a carpal tunnel, except in his thumb knuckles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a disaster. Wonderful.
Yes.
Great news.
All right. Moving on to other news. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has been very vocal in his opposition to legalizing marijuana. Now, interestingly enough, fairly recently, he sent a letter to states that legalize marijuana for recreational use and essentially let them know that these policies are very, very damaging to their state. And lawmakers and leaders in those states have actually pushed back fairly aggressively. Now, Sessions told Alaskan officials that the 2015 annual drug report released by Alaska state troopers, quote, raises serious questions about whether marijuana regulatory structures will be effective in your state. Now, here's the issue with that annual report. Their recreational marijuana laws did not go into effect until after that report was written. Oops. And so the lawmakers let that be known. So the 2015 report was not relevant to the effectiveness of the legal marijuana industry in the state because sales from licensed businesses did not begin until 2016. That was according to a letter that officials in Alaska sent back to Jeff Sessions in response to his letter.
And it's not the only state that they screwed up in. They also sent letters to Washington, the state of Washington. Same exact problem. And it's hilarious, actually, if you think about it for a second, because not only are they wrong, but they're sending the exact opposite message. They're saying, oh man, the accidents are up, and your usage of marijuana is up, and Washington state is sending all this pot to 43 other states, and you've got marijuana labs exploding. No, all that happened under prohibition.
Right. Yes. And so here's what happened. So Jeff Sessions will focus on, you know, the plants that exploded. And yeah, those were illegal operations. And so lawmakers in Washington, who also got, you know, a similar letter from the Department of Justice, responded back and said, those were all illegal marijuana plants. All the legal ones that are regulated and have to deal with oversight are actually performing well, safely. You know, crime has gone down as a result of what we've done with marijuana policy. And so they're fighting back. And look, let's keep it real. One of the main reasons why they're fighting back is because it's become a cash cow for a lot of these states. People like pot and people want to buy it legally and it's being taxed. That revenue is very precious to these lawmakers.
I like the fact that we're talking about marijuana and exploding plants. It has kind of a delicious double meaning. And to your point about the revenue, the state of California alone is looking at $20 billion with a B dollars in revenue. Whew, that's a lot of fun. Good clean fun for sure. And they don't have to do anything and people can sit around and have the munchies and it's all good clean fun for all the kids in the room. Now, you look at Jeff Sessions, or Jefferson B. Sessions III. Mm-hmm. When we saw the movie Reefer Madness, and I think we all remember that beautiful film classic, it was all about the African Americans getting erections when seeing white women enter the room. And that was the 1930s reason for illegalizing marijuana. And then famously later, George Bush I was saved heroically by using a parachute made out of hemp. It saved his life. And then we had hemp for victory during World War II. Grow it in your backyard until somebody once again got a boner. And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
so
right.
Let me add on top of that. George Washington was a hemp farmer. That's the main thing that he did. That's how, and George Washington in today's dollars would have been the richest president we ever had. And yes, richer than Trump, who's lying about his wealth. And so we didn't always hate marijuana and hemp and these plants. It's a development in history, and it's for a number of reasons. One set of reasons, the one that Carrie laid out. Another one was that it used to be called something else, then it got switched to marijuana because we wanted to blame the immigrants coming in from Latin America, and hence we gave it more of a Spanish-sounding name.
Marijuana.
That's right, and used that to arrest a lot of people. And then finally, in the Nixon era, it was when we started the modern war on drugs, and we had one of his top aides who told the press, many years later, yes, we did it to target blacks and to target hippie liberals. It was for political reasons. So the fact that this still exists is amazing, ridiculous, and it is totally political, and prohibition never works.
Right. I would like to go back and address Carrie's point about boners because I think it's relevant. So it's really funny how I haven't seen Reefer Madness and I actually want to watch it. I know a lot about it just based on what I've read, but the whole notion that black people got boners from smoking it. Like there's actually some science, and I don't think that there's causation yet, but they have found some correlation between excessive and heavy pot use and a lower sex drive. And so, look, I don't know why I'm bringing this up. I just think it's hilarious that that was what they used. And of course, there's no fact behind it whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't think they did a lot of science before they did Reefer Madness, the movie in the 1930s. And finally, I just love how counterproductive this is because it shows you that prohibition wasn't working, but it also shows you that regulation does work.
Right.
So if Jeff Sessions wanted to damage his own cause, he couldn't have done it any better than this. They're proving that big government works, and when it's done legally, pot brings you a lot of revenue and a lot of good times. And one last piece of fact, piece of actual statistics from Washington: among young students, pot usage has actually gone down. You want to know the ironic reason why? Since it's become legal, it's become harder to get.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of ways to get it legally, but not if you're a kid. So they drove the drug dealers out of business, and now the kids can't get it.
It's awesome.
Perfect.
Right. Just get out of our lives. Like, let us live.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, real quick, last story.
Yeah, let's do, I'm skipping ahead to the PETA story. All right. PETA has settled a case with a young girl whose dog was euthanized after PETA made a pretty devastating mistake. Now, the settlement came to the amount of $49,000, and it all started when PETA employees were allegedly called to a mobile home park where there were supposedly dogs running around that were dangerous. They show up, they find a cute little chihuahua who was not on a leash, and they decided to take that chihuahua to their Virginia shelter. And then they euthanized that chihuahua that same day. Now, laws indicate that you are supposed to have a 5-day grace period to allow the owner some time to come and get the dog. But they didn't do that. They euthanized the dog right away. Now, this little girl, this 9-year-old who got the chihuahua as a gift, was understandably upset, and so the family sued PETA. PETA didn't want to go through with the whole lawsuit, so they decided to settle for $49,000, and they've apologized profusely. But it does make you wonder why they would euthanize a chihuahua the same day that they found her.
Yeah, so PETA claims that no, it was a terrible mistake. But Zarate says that PETA operates under a broad policy of euthanizing animals, including healthy ones, because, quote, it considers pet ownership to be a form of involuntary bondage.
Right. Now, look, that's
their claim.
That's
the people suing.
Right. It's not PETA's claim.
That's right.
I have a chihuahua, a reindeer chihuahua, the mothership of all chihuahuas. I have never bound him. He is not in bondage. I give him milk bones. I give him organic beef hearts and North Atlantic salmon.
Oh,
wow,
my dog is
like a king.
My dog eats way better than I do. I cook for my dog.
Okay,
do not cook for myself.
You guys are both mental. But if this is true, so is PETA. Don't euthanize on the same day. And what kind of even if that policy was true and PETA was worried about the bondage, what kind of a person frees the slave and then murders it? Like, that doesn't help it at all. It would seem to be wildly counterproductive. Again, it's not proven that that's PETA's policy, but they did settle the case. All right, we got to go. Carrie Harrison, thank you so much. Check him out on Public Radio. Much love, guys. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.